Hi, I'm Tim Peter, and welcome to Search Chat, Solo Segment's podcast dedicated to all things search, AI, and content marketing related. Who is Solo Segment? Well, we're a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter. You can learn more at solosegment.com. In this episode of Search Chat, Solo Segment CEO Steve Zaker and I talk about how companies can use the data available at their fingertips to create deeper, more meaningful experiences for their customers, how they can use AI to make their data work more effectively, and how they can do it all even when it seems they may not have as much data as they'd like. All of that and more coming at you in this episode of Search Chat right about now. Well, hi, Steve. How you doing this week?
Well,
there's a loaded question, huh?
It is a loaded question. I literally have a bowl of soup, of chicken soup, sitting in front of me waiting for this podcast recording to be done. So that gives you some indication of my head cold status.
Lovely, lovely. Well, it is February. It is that time of year when everybody gets a little under the weather and there's all that going around. But thanks again, as ever, for being here and toughing it out.
I would never miss the opportunity to have a chat with you.
The show must go on.
Indeed, right? It is show business. Yes.
Absolutely. So, you know, we were talking earlier about this interesting concept, and we've talked about it on the show in the past, about behavioral personalization and, you know, how companies can use their data to create a better experience for their customers. So, you know, I'd love to dive into this a little more and talk about how do companies deploy the behavioral data, i.e. the data they already have, to create a better experience for their customers. And just love to pick your brain on that and get some thoughts there.
Yeah, you bet. And it's kind of very timely. I mean, I literally just got off a call. Mike Murray and I were talking to a client and we're prioritizing the next sprint we're doing with them from a consulting perspective.
Yep.
And one of the things that we talked about during that call was exactly that, was kind of personalization and where they had kind of reached the limit of their current personalization efforts. And by the way, they hadn't done a lot because they had focused more on their B2B side of their business than the B2C side of the business. So that's why it was coming to kind of top of mind. And, you know, the challenge with personalization is, you know, where do you, like in many things, right, is where do you get started, right? How do you start?
Right.
How do you begin? You know, what technologies do you select? What data sources do you select? How do you integrate your current data sources with new technologies, right? So there are a lot of ways, a lot of challenging ways that kind of stymie your ability to get started. And one of the things that we discovered as we were working with our clients was not only the data that we provide them, but the data that they have from all their other analytics packages and their other various and sundry sources, right? Their content management system, their registration systems. I mean, companies have a lot of the data that they need themselves to get started.
Right.
And often it doesn't have to start with, I know this is Tim Peter, it's his third visit to the site, he is in the technology industry, right? It doesn't have to start with it, or it just has to start with, this is a returning visitor. Okay, great. Or this is a visitor who is exhibiting some behavioral patterns that are similar to these other behavioral patterns.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
Right. Yeah. And this is really where we're starting to think there's some opportunity, especially with all the concerns about privacy and GDPR and, you know, pick your latest social platforms challenges in this area.
Facebook.
Yeah, we won't mention any names, Facebook. But you know, you have all this data about what is happening on your website. And, you know, again, this is an easy way to step not only into personalization, but also to step into AI. And by that, I mean machine learning. Because if you have all this data, this historical data about what visitors have done on your website, there's specific technologies within the family of machine learning that are able to do the pattern analysis against those behaviors, right?
Right.
And actually, this is your area of expertise more than it is mine. But, you know, that is something that, you know, we're working with several clients right now, is because, hey, if you have this behavioral data and you can recognize the patterns, well, isn't then the next logical step to say, hey, when somebody comes to my website, what pattern do they match? And what That's can right. I then intuit from that?
Right. There's actually a guy I love. Douglas Hubbard wrote a fantastic book years ago called How to Measure Anything, Measuring the Value of Intangibles in Business. It's one of my favorite books of all time. And he's got these rules that he talks about. And what you're describing are right in line with those rules. You know, your problem is not as unique as you think. Right. Somebody else has seen this before.
Yep.
Right. And it's exactly that. Is it a returning visitor or is it a new visitor? You know, something simple. You have more data than you think. Mm-hmm. You need less data than you think.
Sure.
And adequate new data is more accessible than you think. Yeah. Right. There's a lot that you can do there. I wanted you to add on to this in just a second, but there was a story that came out the other day, and I'll make sure we post it in the show notes. Google has discovered that they're doing some medical diagnoses, sort of the same types of things that IBM has been doing with Watson for the last several years. Mm-hmm. And they've discovered that to train the AI to detect certain types of diseases and certain types of conditions actually doesn't take that much training, because the patterns pop so quickly.
Interesting.
That it's right there.
Yeah.
You know, it's right there and you can just see it. You know, so, and I think this is exactly what you're talking about, of people tend to overestimate how much they need to do to get some data to get to a meaningful result, as opposed to, okay, just use what you have and see what's actually there, right? Yeah. I mean, is that a fair restatement of what you were saying?
Yeah, it is. You said it much more succinctly than I did, so that's well done. Yeah, it really is, that's absolutely the truth, is that data is there and it's far more valuable. And I agree with you. I mean, we're kind of early days with some of our product roadmap stuff, mm-hmm. but I expect that there are going to likely be industries or use cases that are more generic across industries, but there's going to be places where the patterns are easier to recognize, right? So there's going to be a higher hit rate on that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you break this down, you know, we were looking at some very early data a couple of weeks ago with one of our clients. And, you know, it appeared at first blush that only about 30% of the data was going to be, I think, rich enough for the kind mm-hmm. of pattern detection that we want to do. Mm-hmm. Now, again, we'll see if that holds true as we take kind of more looks at the data. We let the machine learning kind of progress a little bit more in its pattern recognition, because there's a lot of noise in the visitor data. So part of the journey is recognizing what data to look at and what data to ignore. But, you know, again, in this right. particular company, in this particular industry, you know, so let's say there's 30% of the traffic you can recognize a pattern on. Okay, well, you still mm-hmm. have 70% of the visitors you have to kind of figure out what to do with. But again, there's no telling whether that holds true universally. So could it flip to be instead of 30-70, 70-30 for other companies?
Sure,
I don't know.
Sure.
And that's what we're going to have to see over time. But coming back to, you know, the point that you made, which was everybody has this data, right? There's right. no, I mean, yes, we can bring some other data to the table, but there's no really stopping anybody from getting started on this as long as you have the skills to kind of build the models. And those skills are increasingly becoming, or at least the platforms are increasingly becoming commoditized. Certainly the data science skills are a little more specialized, but again, I think it's becoming more accessible to IT and business teams to do this sort of analysis and really focus on the data that they have and making the best use of it.
Well, it's interesting when you talk about that becoming more accessible. And you know, I think anyone listening to the show knows we have some bias here because we try to be one of those places where it can be more accessible. Right. But there was this new PwC study that speaks to that I thought was fascinating, where in the study, 3 in 5, 63% of CEOs agreed or strongly agreed that AI will have a larger impact on their businesses than the internet has.
Yeah.
Which is staggering.
Yeah.
But, and I definitely want to get your take on this, but I also want to add to it one other finding that was even more staggering, which was in that same data, the people who said that they have no plans to pursue AI initiatives at this time, right? So 60%+ said this is going to be bigger than the internet. And of the people who said, yeah, that's true, and also we have no plans to do anything about it, was 25%, 23%. But I mean, you know, one in four.
One in four. It's absolutely going to change the world and I'm doing nothing.
Exactly. Which is just mind-blowing, just, you know, for that to be a reality. You know, imagine if you were sitting here in 1994 and could know the internet was coming and be like, eh, probably just a phase.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. When you first said that first fact to me about, like, you know, how they thought it was going to be bigger than the internet. Yeah, my initial reaction was, yeah, no way. But then I thought about, you know, if somebody had told me, you know, when Steve Jobs first stood on stage and said, you know, this is going to change the world, right? Smartphones. Mm-hmm. I would have said, okay, it's better, but will it really change the world? And it absolutely changed the world. So, you know, I am going to suspend disbelief for a moment and say, yeah, AI, you know, it is going to be one of those things where, you know, it's going to spend 5 to 7 years being unimpressive. And then before you know it, it's going to be everywhere. And I think it probably is, you know, is this going to evolve the same way like smart speakers did and now smart televisions, right? You know, these things are just going to take off. And I think that anybody who's not using it as a tool is going to eventually suffer a competitive disadvantage because they're not going to have insights into, I mean, at a minimum, all the data, what the data can tell them about their ability to be more competitive in the marketplace. But from a product perspective, it's going to transform products dramatically.
You know, just building on that, can you give an example of some place where, you know, it can be something we're working on or something we've worked with a client or the like, but some place where, you know, we're already seeing that?
Probably one of the most unexciting topics on the planet, which is taxonomy, right? So, for those of you who are unfamiliar with taxonomy and are approximately my age, you can think of the Dewey Decimal System, right? But any way of kind of organizing and structuring a hierarchy of metadata, information about information. And again, a library, for those of you who remember what libraries were, you know, you got to find the books, right? So you need to know these are the history books. And in the history books, these are the American history books. And in the American history books, these are the, you know, Revolutionary War books, right? So that kind of structured hierarchy.
Yeah.
And so that is an area where I've always thought of it traditionally being an area for experts, right? Library science experts and, you know, people who really understood information about information.
Right.
And what struck me when we were working with a client, and this was last year we started this work, and it actually manifested itself into a product that we have today, but it was using machine learning. You know, our first step was, well, we can use machine learning to take your taxonomy and apply it to content, right? Because we can teach a machine to recognize, oh, this content is about, say, this topic.
Yeah.
What blew me away, though, was if you don't have that topic taxonomy, because that's almost the easy part.
Yep.
Teaching a machine to recognize something you already have, okay. But what blew me away is using text analytics and kind of the natural language processing kind of family, right? So another branch of AI, you can actually have the machine tell you what your content is about.
Right.
And so it assumed you don't have your topic taxonomy, right? So now tell me what our content is about so that we can develop the topic taxonomy and then use that topic taxonomy to develop a set of training data so that now the machine can apply that topic taxonomy to all of your data. And so I think we started out with, you know, a random sample of 30,000 web pages out of the 1.3 million this client had, and use text analytics to extract the 43 topics that we think all their content is about. And then we used a supervised machine learning model to develop, or a machine learning method to develop the model to then be able to apply those 43 topics to the 1.3 million pages. That is an example of how, like, I got to tell you, if I am a library scientist who wants to focus on, no, That's just no. Don't get into that line of work. I'm sure there's lots of other taxonomy and ontology and, you know, library sciencey kind of things that aren't going to be wiped out by text analytics. But I got to tell you, when we saw how well text analytics was at extracting topic taxonomies from random content and then applying that using, you know, machine learning at scale, it just blew us away. It blew the client away. You know, I almost feel like we charged too little for that project, right? It was really, so again, if you look at that kind of use case, which is relatively mundane, and it's going to fundamentally change how that business works. I mean,
right.
Whoa.
Well, and talk, if you will, about why that mattered, right? Because, you know, for people who have never had to develop a taxonomy or never had to try to implement a taxonomy or heaven forbid, never tried to update a taxonomy, right? You know, just kind of talk about what actually came of that from that perspective.
Yeah, the challenge with all taxonomy work is the scale of the application of that taxonomy. And by that, I mean, if you have 1.3 million documents, how do you then, once you know, I have two types of topics. I talk about business topics and I talk about technology topics. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have a taxonomy of two things. How do I categorize all 1.3 million documents as one thing or the other or neither, right?
Right.
Well,
or both.
Or both, right. Yeah, that's true. That could certainly be about both. You know, the good old days, you know, 10 years ago, you had to get a human to go in there and do that work. Mm-hmm. And so it was literally the job of, you know, swarms of human beings to go in there and apply it. And let's assume you were smart about this. You said, well, of 1.3 million pages, only 300,000 get visitors in any given period of time. So I'm just going to do the 300,000. That's still a huge amount of work. And, you know, more importantly, you're faced with two maintenance problems, right? The one is maintaining, the old content. And the other one, or old or new content, as it has needs to be refreshed as topics change, as content is maintained. And the other thing you do is, you know, you got to maintain the taxonomy because you might start writing about new topics. And how do you maintain that? And so it was usually difficult but not impossible to create the business case to get the first taxonomy project done, but you could never create the business case for maintenance and updating and keeping it current. And so the challenge with taxonomy work is that it would go stale very quickly and you couldn't get the funding to maintain it. And what AI does is it just fundamentally wipes the cost out, it wipes the effort out, and it makes it just an operational IT process.
Right. Well, and the thing that, you know, is really fascinating about this, and this isn't with relationship to this client, because I don't know that we can share this data, but I actually worked on a taxonomy project a long time ago. And literally just in terms of cost savings by implementing the taxonomy that we did at the organization where I worked at the time, which was not great. You know, it took a long time. It involved a lot of people. It was somewhat outdated the day we hit publish.
Right.
You know, but even the ineffective version, we determined by improving people's ability to access information and the time savings there, we were saving the company about $3 million a year, which, you know, and that's 20 years ago, 17 years ago.
Sure.
Right. So it's remarkable how much something like that at scale, which is where it's incredibly hard to do, is incredibly valuable to do.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And that value point is so important. And you know, a taxonomy, you know, wasn't very popular, not for want of value, but for just the expense, quite frankly. And the fact that they're able now to deploy taxonomy as facets in site search, as categorization in their CMS. I mean, there are lots of ways you can put this to work to actually create value, but the hill was too high to climb. And so people didn't climb it. And I think AI is going to fundamentally make taxonomy more approachable to more businesses.
Well, and just to expand the universe of things that, you know, we're applying AI to, there was another study by Quantcast and Forbes Insights that show already about 1 in 8 marketers have seen AI technologies become critical to carrying out their marketing strategies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which, I mean, it goes back to what you said a minute ago, which I think was so spot on of at some point it becomes a competitive differentiator. Yeah. We're not quite there yet, but it's starting to get there for these folks, you know, these 1 in 8, and it's starting to get there for these folks where we do things like the taxonomy, where the advantages are clear, and yet we still have 23% saying they don't have any plans.
Yeah, no. And, you know, it's funny, you know, you mentioned this, and I might've mentioned this last week or our last podcast, but, you know, we recently were looking at vendors for our sales nurturing process. And mm-hmm. the one who came to the table with a compelling AI story won. Now, I'll be honest with you, it's unclear to me because this whole sales value, you know, understanding sales value when you're buying this stuff is hard to tease out because
yeah, sure.
It's a complex process. But, you know, the fact that they said, hey, this thing you won't have to touch for the first three, you know, the first three emails that go out are all kind of smart and they pre-qualify and yada, yada. Mm-hmm. I mean, they sprinkled enough AI pixie dust on their story that that's the one we bought. And so, you know, just having the capabilities that you could talk about in a compelling way certainly differentiated their product when we went to buy it. And I suspect that, you know, whether it's overt part of the product or kind of behind the scenes helping you become more efficient or more effective in delivering for clients, regardless, it is going to be a differentiator.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. I'm also going to do a shameless plug here. You know, for folks who are looking to get started, there was a post I wrote on Biznology earlier this week about how you can get started. And it's basically tying together artificial intelligence and pizza. So
two of my favorite subjects. You know,
two of my favorite subjects, exactly. So I figured just put a slightly different spin on it from that perspective. But, you know, what I want to do is I want to tie these two things together because we just talked about behavioral personalization. We just talked about the impact of AI. And I think you've got a really cool perspective on this idea of how you tie those two things together and align them to the visitor journey for B2B. You know, because there's a really interesting problem there. And I think we're working on a really cool solution. I'd love to hear you talk about that a little bit.
Oh, so this is more shameless plug time, huh? All right.
well, I did the shameless plug for the article.
There you go. We'll do a little bit of everything. Segment. Yeah. Well, you know, again, this is a product journey. We just launched this. I've been talking to a lot of digital marketers over the past couple of months about all of these topics. And it is an area where, you know, there is a lot of need with regards to, you know, making visitor journeys real that we've been talking about for forever, right? Just like this client Mike and I were talking to earlier this afternoon, you know, that's part of their big challenge is that, you know, like those taxonomy projects that sat on a bookshelf, they've got a visitor journey project that's kind of, all right, great. We got our to be, we got our desired state, but you know, how do you begin to bridge? And I think there's a lot of challenges there. And it does come back to there's a lot of data sitting on your servers. And so Guidebox is a product that is in beta right now with two clients. And, you know, what we're looking to do with them is to really understand, can you mobilize this data in a way that allows you to progress visitor journeys, allows you to, you know, essentially this notion of behavioral personalization, right? Allows you to look at the behaviors of people to discern based upon those behaviors, what patterns they're matching. And based upon what patterns they're matching, of course, that gives you some insight into what task they're trying to accomplish. And that's really the goal for everyone, right? We, you know, companies want to connect visitors with tasks and visitors want to connect to the tasks that will help them be more effective, you know, in their lives. And
absolutely.
Right? Yeah. So so that is where we're going. So we've started with really looking at more of a rules-based one, and we're really diving into how can you take search data, that is to say website search data, the data of people who are on your website, who are doing searches, and take and put that data to use in trying to predict where people should go next. But the real journey is to kind of take a couple of different pieces of data. It's first the search data, right? So we'll continue to use that. The journey data, right? So it's all those clicks and mouse overs and everything that people are doing on your website. It's the content. So knowing something about what the content is about that all those clicks are about, right? So connecting the content to the journey. And then finally, those tasks. That's kind of the fourth piece is what tasks are people looking to accomplish? So if you can create patterns across those four elements, That gives you some ability to do this thing we're calling predictive or behavioral personalization, which is to say, Tim has come to our website. Tim has made three clicks. The algorithm, because this is where the machine learning comes in, right? It's already done the basically created an unsupervised model. If you're kind of in the lingo of AI, right, has created an unsupervised model just by doing pattern analysis and pattern detection in the data. And so as you feed that model, oh, this was a click, he did this, he went here, typed this in the key. So you're beginning to accumulate in that model basically a prediction, right? A prediction that they're targeting a certain task, that they may be going through this journey towards that task. And then how can we begin to make sure that they complete that task, right? How can we improve the likelihood that they're going to achieve a task or a goal and decrease the likelihood that they're going to exit, go somewhere else? And so that really is our goal, is to bring all that data together in a machine learning / AI model that would then allow us to predict what content is going to be most effective at a given moment to help somebody progress on their journey. And so it's early days in the product, but as we talked about earlier, the data is there, right? Companies have this data.
Right. Well, what I've always found really fascinating about the product, what I always find really fascinating about what we're trying to do here, is the people for whom this is the biggest problem are actually the places where AI can go to work most effectively because of two reasons, right? One is that there's a lot of data, and that, as you've put it before, there is no cart, right? Yes. It's this very complex journey. It's this very complex path that customers will take as they make their decision. Yeah. And so it's taking those two things and putting all that data together and letting a machine go to work on it and say, there's the thread. Right. There's the piece we want to pull out. You know, with no disrespect to people who've worked on customer journeys or customer journey projects by any stretch, because those are really valuable. They're a proxy for what you're really trying to get to. You know, they're a way of saying, this is what it looks like based on what we know, so that we can then, you know, create content that fits this phase or this stage.
Yes. Yeah. No, absolutely.
And kind of what we're doing here is saying, okay, can we leapfrog that? Can we go the next step and say, don't worry about the mapping the journey. Let the data tell you where they are on the journey and then present the right information at that point.
Just like text analytics extracts truth from your content about topic, about taxonomy, I think in the same way, some of these unsupervised machine learning models are going to extract truth about your visitor journey.
Yeah.
And you don't have to actually sit down and write it, because it's going to tell you what it is.
Right. Right. No, I think that's great. I think that's awesome. Well, Steve, looking at the time, I think that's probably a good place to wrap up. We'll let you go put your chicken soup in the microwave get that warmed up and help you feel better.
Thanks very much, Tim.
All right. As always, great talking with you.
You bet.
Talk to you next time.
Take care.
Chat is brought to you by Solo Segment. Solo Segment is a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter, and learn more at solosegment.com. If you like what you've heard today, click on the subscribe links you can find at solosegment.com/podcast. On iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts can be found. You can also find us on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/company/solosegment, on Facebook at facebook.com/solosegment, on Twitter using the Twitter handle @solosegment, or you can drop us an email at info@solosegment.com. Again, that's info@solosegment.com. For Search Chat, I'm Tim Peter. I hope you have a great rest of the week. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll look forward to chatting with you next time here on Search Chat. Until then, take care, everybody.